We on? I'd like to call the Appropriation Committee meeting to order. Today is April 1st. We've got the IFS time slot today. The time is 11:04. Roll call, please.
Congressman Potts.
Present.
Congressman Big Horse. Congresswoman Edwards.
Present.
Congresswoman Good Fox.
Present.
Congresswoman Stabler.
Present.
Congresswoman Whitehorn.
Here. We have a quorum. Congresswoman Pratt has noticed me that she had an engagement today at the Language Fair, as well as Congressman Big Horse. So next item on the agenda is prayer. Pour me a word of prayer, please. Father God, we just thank you for this day. We thank you for your love. We thank you for your blessings. We thank you that you are a good, kind, and awesome God to us, Lord. We just ask you to continue blessing us. Draw us nearer to you, Lord. Make us become more like you in our endeavor to walk this world on our paths. We just ask that you be with those that are sick and in mourning and comfort them as only you can do, Lord. I just ask a special blessing on our children that are participating in the language fair today. Just give them courage to do what they know they need to do, to speak boldly and to represent the Osage Nation well. We thank you for their little hearts. All these things we ask in Jesus' name. Amen. Next item on the agenda is approval of minutes.
Motion to approve the minutes as presented.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Those were the minutes from March 27th. Any discussion? All in favor say yes.
Yes. Yes.
Any opposed say no. Okay. We have Treasurer Littleton with us. Would you please join us at the table, Treasurer Littleton? We'd love to have you. The next item on our agenda is appropriations review. That's kind of an all-encompassing. We have a couple of subheadings underneath that, but I believe that we have requested information from Treasurer Littleton's office, and I'm curious to know if you've been able to produce those reports yet.
What are you asking?
Don't have my notes with me. One is... It's going to have to come to me, Treasurer.
Okay. One of them had to do with the permanent fund balance.
Yes, we need to. We were asking for a report on the permanent fund. We were also asking for a report. I think it all surrounds the permanent fund. We were asking for a report about its earnings. And then we also need a report on your calculations, where we are on tribal projected revenue. So I believe that our clerk sent you an email listing those motions that we made on Wednesday of last week, that has the motion in there with the information we were requesting. So that's the first follow-up I want to do with you is, Are we near getting some numbers and good information here at this table?
I believe we are. I do need to put it in a memo form. My assistant was gone on the last week, sick, and I typed up a rough memo, but I haven't got it. But if it would be appropriate, I can give you the highlights of that.
Sure.
And also the numbers. And raise your hand when I get too long in my explanation here. Because I have become aware that there's a misunderstanding that the permanent fund's gone, or part of it's gone. And I want to reassure you that it is not, that all money has been accounted for. There as of February 28th, there was $32,397,031.11 in a combination of the $30 million permanent fund, with the remainder being what we feel like may be the retained revenue amount.
Okay. I don't know that it's ever been the understanding of this committee that the permanent fund is gone, but I believe that when we meet and people get half don't have the complete information, the Osage Public, when we have these public meetings, mm-hmm. that might be the discussion out in the public, but I don't believe anybody at this table's ever represented that the permanent fund is gone.
Good.
Okay.
Good. Well, I just want to make sure that was clear.
Thank you.
Then also, in one of the appropriation meetings earlier, I explained that the permanent fund was recording $17,693.97 of estimated revenue for the year.
Yes.
And I would like to expound upon that if I could.
Please, yes.
Okay. And what the permanent fund is invested in through our investment manager, our current investment manager, and held in custody at Bank of Oklahoma, it's basically in two investments. There is a money market account that is $4,376,422.91. And that money market account is what generates that $17,000 return interest, which is 2.17%. The remainder of that $32 million, which is $20,608.20, is invested in U.S. Treasury bills. And I apologize if I'm going over some things that you all know, but I really think it might help in the understanding of those. Treasury bills are zero interest earning bills. When you buy them at a discount. So you buy them for less than their face amount, and they don't return income until you cash them in when they become mature. Okay? So those treasury bills, if we hold them until maturity, if we cashed them out at the end of February, they would generate around $324,000 of interest. If we hold them until maturity, the amount of income that they will return is $643,911.71. But we have to hold them to maturity to reach that. And the maturity date on them is August 15th, 2019. So we won't get that $600,000, $643,000 until August 15th of 2019. So if I tell you that you've got that money and you appropriate it, I'm putting the cart before the horse.
Thank you for that clarity. That helps a lot, and I understand it. And I see that, just from my review, I see that as we need to work on what this permanent fund dividend or earnings, it's not interest income earned, and it's not that simple. So investments are of a different nature, but I believe the original bill cited interest income off of it. So I think that we need to have a better conversation. We will have some bills on the table soon about the permanent fund, and I hope that you're here to help us more clearly define what that is, what these earnings are.
Right.
I think we're all looking at it right now in these definitions somewhat. So thank you. Is there any questions from the table, or did you need to continue on?
Well, there also are other funds out there. There was an investment made in 2015 into a investment vehicle that has been ruled as zero value now. The original investment was $141,000, so we have shares in a worthless company that was invested in 2015 that the bank is still holding our shares in that, they're of no value now.
What did you say the dollar amount of that was?
The original cost was $141,567.50.
And that's a permanent fund investment?
That was part of the original investment vehicle. I'll have to yield to you. I don't know when the permanent fund was actually set up. If it was before that date of July 6, 2015?
It was.
It was?
Yes.
So then it was probably part of that investment back then.
Okay. Congresswoman Edwards.
Were the funds always invested in Bank of Oklahoma?
That I don't know. I'm compiling the historical data for you now that was requested on that email, trying to scoop back in history and find out where it was. I know it was when it was with the previous investment people that it was with Bank of Oklahoma, which Bank of Oklahoma is the custodian, and what they charge us for are transfers. When we buy something or sell something, we've employed investment advisors, and their fees are generated based on the value. So they get a percent or a half a percent or a quarter percent or three quarters of a percent based on the overall value. So we're paying both of those fees on this fund, the investment advisor fee based on value of the investment, and also transaction fees to Bank of Oklahoma.
Okay, thank you.
The only other question I have is whether a suggestion that we look at the permanent fund law and see what it says about investing, because I think we've been operating as a Congress under the impression that these monies were invested in something that was liquid in a year, and that's how the interest, if you will, was able to come back to General Treasury because it matured every year, which I would assume that would have to have been in a CD or something. I guess there's 1 year Treasury bills.
Yes, ma'am, if you're asking me for an answer. Those Treasury bills were purchased on August 16th, 2018, and they become mature on August 15th, 2019.
Okay. And I agree, and we are going to have the permanent fund bill on this table. In fact, it's on our agenda today, but I'm not sure that we'll get to it. We do have a 2:45 meeting set up maybe tomorrow. Do we have a meeting tomorrow, Ms. Walker? Maybe I'm confused. Okay, so I think that we're going to move out from this IFS session. Is there more treasure on this right now that... Briefly, I've been working on a timeline and it's not complete. This is still a work in progress. The second page is unfinished. This is unfinished. But I've worked on a timeline that I think will be helpful possibly to you in some of your research, not knowing when the permanent fund was enacted, how long we've been going in this direction. I still have one more item to put on here. I'm not going to spend our committee time today until this is complete. I just want you to know that I am working on it and documenting it with documents, communications that show a really good timeline. This is when it was first, the inception of the permanent fund. My next page is from
when the RFP went out, but it's still a work in progress. So I wanted to let the committee know I'm about to get all these emails and this documents together where you can understand it in a timeline type of format where it makes sense. Otherwise, it's very hard to decipher what's going on here.
And I have from present to when the RFP was set out that I'd like to coordinate with what you've come up with.
And maybe it can be a subject of one meeting, or we've also discussed it have possibly this committee taking some action and sending this to the Governmental Operations Committee and having a committee hearing on this. So the documents can be here and we can be discussing the cold hard facts of documents and how we can prevent, how we can come up with solutions for this. So, okay, we're going to move on to the next agenda item, appropriated revenue report, which I don't believe we're going to be able to act on or do anything with until we have the condition of what our, a report from the Treasury about what our income is. So.
And really, I'm sorry.
Please continue.
You know, one of the really problems of that calculation is the retained revenue. And we don't have a solid number until we get the audit back. And we got the September 30th, 2017 audit in February of 2019. We're waiting on the September 2018 audit to be completed.
I know that if you have that retained revenue total, on completion of the audit, it's going to make things look a lot better. But I think this committee, for the purposes that we have before us right now, we need a report now because we're working on legislation today to help help Osage LLC get their audit complete. So, I mean, I don't think that that's going to happen this session at all. So we need a report of what it looks like right now where we sit, because we can't function, can't appropriate funds, and we need to know if we're going to have to back up on something, which I don't even know if that's possible right now, because I think this is totally unprecedented where we are right now. So we can't wait on retained revenue. Committee, do you think we can wait on retained revenue before we need numbers now where we are? So,
of course, I never was all that excited about trying to make a fund out of that retained revenue, and not sure we should be appropriating any of it until it's audited.
I agree. That's why I don't think that we're going to get an audited total. Do you think we're going to get an audited total this session?
I mean, I can give you a best guess number, but we won't have the auditor's report for several months. It looks like.
I have another question.
Congressman Edwards.
Is there a way to, I mean, is it all a function of time? Are they not able to get the audit done by this time?
The auditors have finished their field work, on-site field work and gathering of information for the Osage Nation. What we're missing are the LLC. They have to have a completed audit that it becomes a part of the nation's audit before the nation's auditor that audit. So they didn't release the 2017 until February because of waiting on the LLCs to complete their audit.
Do we have anything in the law about when the LLCs are required to have their audits in by?
I don't believe that there is.
We need to write that down.
Treasurer Littleton?
I have not seen a law. Now, what I proposed is that LLCs include their audit with the same auditor that the nation has and do it all jointly. There's the question of independence there that seems to be a struggle, but if that happened, then we would have one auditor to deal with as opposed to however many it is right now. And when we issue an RFP for an audit proposal from an auditor, we tell them when we want it, okay? And we've told, I believe that they're supposed to have submitted the audit to us by now, I might be mistaken, but they can't release, they can't release it until they bring in these other auditors, which are separate from the auditor's information.
What about Osage Business Enterprises? Did they, have they turned their audit in?
Home Health, Osage Home Health.
Home Health? They don't turn them in to me, they send them to, or they have, excuse me, they have not turned their audit in to the Treasury's office that I'm aware of.
I was, from their meeting, and I may have this wrong, but I understood that their audit usually was combined, a combined function of this government, that our auditor audited their, they send you their documents and it gets audited. That was my understanding.
Well, we do need to work that out then, because why are we doing it one way for one and another way for another?
And I believe that ONES also has performed in that way too, that our auditor has, correct me if I'm wrong.
Osage Home Health has been set up differently than all the other LLCs. It's a corporation, from
right.
what I understand.
Yes.
And because of that, someone ruled that they could be enjoined with the same auditor do their work, and so they would have those numbers at the same time. It's the other LLCs that seem to be the issue.
So I'm going to ask, so ONES, are they performing an outside audit to be combined with ours, or are auditors going to audit their records?
I've contacted them and suggested that in the future that the 9/30/2019 audit be included. I have not received notification back if their board has agreed to that. Osage Home Health has agreed to it. Blue Stem Ranch has agreed to it. Have not got a commitment back from Osage LLC Tallgrass.
I'm talking about the 18's audit. Is ONES included in our, because I'm Commerce Chair also, so I'd like to talk to the boards and know, and maybe I'll just do that and see where their audit stands.
Yeah, I can contact them and ask that same question if you'd like.
Okay.
But I haven't heard.
Congressman Edwards.
How did we deal with this? I mean, Osage LLC has been in existence for a long time.
They've always performed their own outside audit.
And then they just turned it into the nation, and that?
And then our auditor combines it in the nation's overall audit.
So this year, or 17 was the year that it was behind, and so that caused
our whole audit to be released late. We're just going to get the report on it this session. Okay, I think we need to move on to some legislation, unless there's anything else, that any more questions about what we've been talking about. Okay, let me get back to, I will finish this up and get it to you as soon as possible. I know it needed to be done yesterday. Let me see, right here, is that where our, right here? Okay, here we are. Congressman Potts, okay, let me go to that agenda item. We are now on ONCA 1857. Let's have a, have I lost my phone? No, okay. Okay, we're on ONCA 1857, an act to establish an Osage Law budgetary process that is governed by the principles of transparency, accountability, defining terms, and establishing limitations, and to establish an alternate effective date. Congressman Potts, can you tell us where we left off, and were we at F?
Page 4, section C, F, yes.
Okay, I'm going to give about 15 minutes on this, and then I'm going to go to another piece of legislation. Sorry that we have such a short time, and I'll try to find some more stable meeting times instead of IFS, because we're pretty involved right now. Please continue.
Okay. So section F, the Association of Congress shall not appropriate annual budget funding at any time that exceeds 95% of projected revenue stated in the most recently enacted projected revenue resolution for the applicable fiscal year.
I like that provision because I think, I don't know if it would help us.
It would.
Right now or not, but I'd like to know what percentage we've appropriated of our FY19 funding.
So this would represent a change because the permanent fund is currently in projected revenue. So this represents a change that pulls those revolving funds out, says what we bring in a year, we will not appropriate more than 95% of. The reasoning for that is the situation we're in right now, where we're not going to meet the projection for interest income. We know we're not going to meet the projection for interest income. If we had a provision as F, we would be okay. Currently, you run the risk of being over what we consider projected revenue if you take out the permanent fund. So this provision is almost identical to what the state of Oklahoma does. I know other entities do this. It builds in a cushion for situations like this. I think it's fiscally responsible. And there you go.
Okay, continue.
G is revolving funds once projected as revenue may be appropriated in accordance with Osage law. Established revolving fund balances shall not be included in annual projected revenue. This solves the argument that we've always had of whether or not the permanent fund shall be included in projected revenue, or whether or not $30 million projected 1 year plus $30 million projected the next year equals $60 million. It doesn't. It's still $30 million. And the provision in G would provide language that would solve that problem.
I really support that being in our budgetary bill, too. That's always, I've never seen the revolving fund, the permanent fund or any revolving fund balance being projected revenue. If we're gonna say the permanent fund is projected revenue, then why don't we say the scholarship fund is projected revenue? Why don't we say the health benefit fund is projected revenue? Because they aren't. And I don't believe the permanent fund is either. What? Congresswoman Edwards.
Wasn't this always a function of trying to figure out what the Constitution meant in terms of spending shall not exceed projected revenue?
Correct.
So it's not projected revenue for the year, but it is revenue that you can spend.
Correct,
which
is
why it's been projected before.
The language says once projected as revenue may be appropriated in accordance with Osage law.
Got it.
Assistant Chief Redcorn.
Can someone help me understand how this squares with the claim the other day that this language in this bill does encompass all of the expenditures? Budget outlay says all of the expenditures, and if my memory serves, I was instructed that means that budget outlay includes health benefit, it includes scholarship benefit, it includes capital asset funding. And there's some conflicts of that already that I've noticed in the definitions, but in the context of this particular, how if budget outlay contains all of those things, why wouldn't they contain the money that are in those funds? And in the case of leftover money in a fund, how do you determine whether that's in or out on the next year?
Congressman Potts.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't believe that the budgetary outlay definition or clause specifically stated that those expenditures were part of budgetary outlays. I think that was a request for a more holistic approach, but I don't think that the budgetary outlays are specific to direct assistance, specifically the big three direct assistance funds. It's more targeted at the branches of government.
Okay, so our conversation that we had the other day about making them all-inclusive is not the same today as it was then.
I believe it's still consistent that it doesn't include those directly.
Could we return very quickly to the definition of budget outlays?
Is the amount of anticipated expenditures for a given fiscal year. And I would submit that next year's appropriation to the revolving fund for scholarships, health benefit, will be a part of the executive branch appropriation. We appropriate that money to the executive branch, to those funds, that's going to be accounted for in budgetary outlay. It doesn't have to be specifically accounted for from that fund, because once projected, those expenditures are allowed by Osage law.
Well, I'm looking for the limitation that you articulated in the definition of budget outlay.
There are no limitations.
So budget outlay is and does include all the health benefit, does include capital expenditures. That's where I'm getting a disconnect, is that the definition of budget outlay does not match up with, for instance, the rest of the definitions point to operations, as you indicated, but that definition does not. We are advocating that everything be one budget. That the even though the fund may have X number of dollars in it, that we include that, so we're looking at everything at once. As we discussed the other day, the fact that capital expenditures are always an outlier and separate, and that the health benefit and the scholarship benefit, which are growing at a very fast rate, are not included in this, is the problem, actually, or at least at minimum part of the problem. So
I don't understand that.
I'm lost on what that statement meant right there.
Also, I just want to say that the scholarship is not growing at a very fast rate. The scholarship's has been flat for 3 years. So, I mean, just a correction there. I don't know how fast the rate the health benefit is growing. I haven't seen the statistics on that.
Did I completely misunderstand some of the assurances I was given the other day that budget outlay did include those things, or was somebody other than was it you, Madam Chair, that was saying that when we were having this part of the discussion, we were having the discussion about cap assets especially, and I came away thinking that the committee thought, or at least most of the committee thought, that we were including budget outlay, including that. I think I asked you specifically, do you anticipate that being that? So.
I do, and I think that we're saying the same thing today, are we not?
No.
I believe we are. Mm-hmm. A budget outlay is, to me, includes operating funds of branches, in my mind. It includes all the budgets that we spend, capital budgets, the budget for scholarship, the budget for health benefit, the budget for all operating budgets. It's what we outlay in budgets that are appropriated. Am I misunderstanding what a budgetary outlay is?
No.
Okay.
The reasoning behind it would be we set projected revenue. We're going to spend $40 million. A budgetary outlay tells you how we're going to spend $40 million. If expenditures ever exceed that, those expenditures are allowed by the enacting laws of the revolving funds. So if we say in year one, we're going to appropriate $8 million of the $40 million to the Higher Education Scholarship Fund, once it's in the fund, it can be spent in accordance with Osage law, which is consistent with G. Once projected, those funds can be spent in accordance with Osage law. So they will be included in budgetary outlays. We're not going to specifically mention them in budgetary outlays because I don't want to be restrictive in any way, but it includes those amounts.
That's how I understood it. Are we all having the same understanding?
I'm not at this point, but I'll go back to the drawing board and look some more. I'm seeing some conflicts in the definitions. Thank you.
Okay, let's continue on.
Continuing on, we get into the language of approved annual budget support documentation, establishing a deadline, and independent budgets. This language is directly from Standing Bear versus Pratt, striking out what was declared unconstitutional from the court's guidance, and adding back in what I believe was upheld. Everybody does have a memo from legislative counsel with an illegal opinion that says that what was stricken was indeed what was stricken by the court. So what is remaining are the limitations that were in budget parameters and limitations with the constitutional provisions only. The only one that would be added here would be H. The support documentation shall completely and accurately explain the budget justification and include by funding source justification for line item expenditures and conform with all relevant aspects of this act. Specifically on page 32 of Standing Bear versus Pratt, the court says that it is within Congress's scope of congressional appropriation power because each branch requiring, or each entity requesting appropriation is responsible for providing Congress with complete, relevant, and accurate picture of its appropriation request. So that is the reason for adding H under support documentation.
Any questions? Please continue.
Quick question.
Congresswoman Edwards.
So this will be not only the funding source, but also the expenditure, because that was one of the things that we've been looking forward to that we haven't yet received. In other words, you referenced the funding source in the expenditure.
Correct. I believe so. That actually gets into the next section.
All right.
Continue, please.
The next section is repealing the current law that establishes the format for the legislation. So here, Congresswoman Edwards, in C is where you would see the funding source category is defined by 150 and C1A, expenditures by expense category and line item.
All right.
So this would be establishing the format that says we need to know by expense category and line item, and that is by funding source. So again, you see that Congress is charged with drafting and passing the appropriation legislation, which establishes the annual budget. The Congress shall ensure that the appropriation legislation containing annual operating funds for each year is uniform, consistent with the OSH Constitution, and then you get into the format. Contains funding source by category, expenditures by expense category, fiscal year limitations, the branch of government, independent agency, department, or entity to which the funding is appropriated, an effective date, and authorization to spend such amount, which is already currently in every single one of our appropriation legislations.
I just wanted to let the treasurer know that in years past, we've been trying to move towards this so that you can see not only where the revenue comes from, but where it goes out. So we had this big number, and then you say, well, where are the federal funds being spent, or where are the, and you couldn't do that because we weren't getting that information in the format. So I know that we're looking forward to having, you know, where you can compare apples to apples.
Section D continues to require the Appropriations Committee to set the electronic budget template on or before May 1st of each fiscal year. And it also states that any and all requests for annual appropriations shall be accompanied by support documentation, which shall be in the same format as established by the legislative branch on or before May 1st of each year.
Assistant Chief Redcorn.
Did we skip over last part of 105? I was waiting for a particular section. I don't know if we went ahead or I just missed it.
I'm not sure.
When we went by it, I have a question about 105E.
Yes, go ahead.
No approved budget or independent budget for any given fiscal year shall be introduced as general appropriation legislation unless a motion to adopt the annual projected revenue resolution or report for the same fiscal year is passed on the floor of Congress. We believe that this is an important piece of legislation. However, the language, a motion to adopt, would indicate to me that the resolution will not be presented to the chief for signature. Do I understand that correctly?
We can amend that. It's intended to operate the exact same way it currently does, which is in Osage law right now, in that all this provision would do is say, we're not going to spend money before we know what money we have to spend.
I would just submit that this is not using the Constitution's language. This is not a resolution that just has to do with the business of Congress, and therefore would be presented to the chief for signature.
So I have a question. So what happens when the Congress, in conjunction with the treasurer and everybody else that has anything to do with knowing about the revenue, the upcoming revenue of the nation, agrees to something and it's put in the resolution, and then the chief refuses to sign the resolution? Where does that leave us without the ability to?
Are you suggesting that if the treasurer agrees with it, that the chief has to?
No, I'm just saying happens when, because I believe we've had.
Imagine you go back to the drawing board. It's the direct answer to your question.
Well, but you know, we have a certain time frame within which we're supposed to be doing this, and when we all don't come prepared and ready to go, then we end up butting up against deadlines. And
are you suggesting that lack of preparation should cause the chief not to have that veto power?
It might cause him to. I'm remembering in the past when we passed resolutions that got vetoed, and we ended up with no projected revenue, and the attitude in some circles was just, oh well, start spending. And I thought that that was really not something we should be doing. We should be arriving at the revenue projection in this session so that everybody can move forward. I don't know why it always seems to be such a troublesome. I think it boils down to a power struggle, is what it looks like to me. But why would we want to get in a position where a resolution could be vetoed and we'd have no number?
I'm just following existing law and the Constitution's mandates. I fail to fully follow your hypothetical and believe that it should cause us not to submit this to the chief. So that's our position.
So are you submitting that this language, you're not comfortable with it because you don't see our ordinary practice that we've followed the past years?
No, I'm sorry, let me make clear about the basis.
Okay.
Any resolution that doesn't have strictly to do with the business of the Congress is supposed to be presented to the chief for signature. That's what the Constitution says, regardless of subject matter.
And you're saying that the way you read
that
this
says it's a motion to adopt. A motion to adopt is not subject to a chief's veto. That's my point.
Congressman Potts.
Page 5, line 193, strike, motion to adopt the annual projected revenue resolution or report for the same fiscal year is passed on the floor of Congress, and insert, Congress has passed the annual projected revenue resolution for the same fiscal year.
So you're cutting out. Okay. Do I have a second to the motion?
Second.
Okay.
It'd be cutting out the motion to adopt language and specifically stating Congress has passed the annual projected revenue resolution for the same fiscal year.
Okay, question.
Congresswoman Edwards.
Doesn't that go to his same point, though?
I don't believe it does. That if we have to pass a projected revenue resolution, it would have to be signed by the principal chief.
That would be until...
I agree.
Until, no. I think that until a revenue resolution is enacted would be...
Thank
not
you.
Just Congress, that just Congress passes.
Resolutions aren't enacted, though.
Well, they are.
That's not the language we use on our resolutions, because I just stuck my nose in them not too long ago. Assistant Chief Redcorn.
I cannot quote you the language, but I'm sure Congresswoman Edwards is familiar with it. It has to do with overriding a chief's veto is the proper phrase for that.
I might have one right here.
Would it be better to say enacted or passed the annual projected revenue resolution?
Well, or passed would put you in exactly the same position.
I think he's saying that
enacted would
has
come
the force
closest.
Of suggestive language, which is not binding.
Assistant Chief Redcorn, I'd like to be clear that it's not my understanding that this would not be a resolution that was sent to the principal chief. We send the projected revenue resolution for signature of the chief.
I would submit that the language in E is in conflict with your statement.
Motion to withdraw and restate. Page 5, line 191, strike E in its entirety. I don't have that one written down.
Well,
I don't want to strike that. No, sorry.
Let me look at the Constitution.
Well, I think we need to look at the language of our resolutions.
We couldn't pass that.
Do you have a second? Do we have a second on that? It's not there.
Well, one somewhere.
Do you have an engrossment from Rules and Ethics, Congressman?
I don't.
We got one of everything here.
Do you have a...
Do you have your engrossed report that you gave this morning?
On that resolution? Thank you.
Dana went to get my... Adopted.
Right.
Authorizing it to become effective. Maybe the word needs to be effective. So strike is passed on the floor of Congress and insert is effective.
What is the question?
Under the Constitution
of
the
United States.
Whether or not the chief has to sign it before it becomes enrolled? Or
he doesn't
effective.
See that language as... We need to fix it, Congresswoman.
Well, I would agree that it's a little iffy, and how I even was talking to Trey the other day about my resolution for the casino and the Expedia, and I actually had to get clarification from Trey. I was like, "Is the chief signing this or no?" Like, how? For some reason, I just I had to ask, and he was like, "Yes."
Right.
The chief has to sign that in order for it to, yeah. So, I mean, I agree. It's a little...
I'm not demanding the language be fixed right now, but I'm simply raising the
not
point.
Not clear.
Thank you.
Totally clear.
Okay,
I wasn't even
that?
Clear on my own bill. So.
Five.
Okay, I have an amendment.
Do I have an amendment on the floor, or did it ever get a second?
I withdrew.
Never got a second? Okay. Congresswoman Edwards?
Page 5, line 193, strike is passed on the floor of Congress and insert. Strike passed on the floor of Congress and insert effective after is.
Insert, please say that again.
You're going to strike passed on the floor of Congress and after is insert effective. So it would read the revenue resolution or report for the same fiscal year is effective. And I guess a report could probably be effective by motion. so I get, are you trying to?
This is the language that's currently in law.
Okay. I know, and we probably had to put the, I think we put the report in there because we were dealing with a situation where the resolution was getting vetoed, and then we were with, there we were with nothing.
Correct.
But that won't change anything. My amendment.
Is there a second to the amendment? I have a second to the amendment, discussion, we're having discussion on the amendment.
It won't change the fact that there's still a report, I'm just saying that.
Correct.
Corrects. It mirrors the language of what we're putting in our resolutions.
Any more discussion? All in favor of the amendment signify by saying yes?
Yes.
Any opposed? Seeing none, the amendment passes. Well, I was gonna stop you at 15 minutes, but it looks like I didn't. Congressman Potts, you might have to go second next time we're having this meeting on legislation.
Power through.
Please continue on.
The next is section on employee salaries. Salaries and wage increases shall be made solely according to the provisions of a merit-based system established by Osage law, except as otherwise provided by the Osage Constitution.
That's clear. Continue. And any questions about that section? Continue.
Page, sure.
Assistant Chief Redcorn?
I'm just gonna make the point that it seems redundant if you have an entire law set out to do something different. But.
I didn't understand that either. Would you please explain what you're referring to so we might tune this up? I mean, we're working on it.
It seems redundant because you have an entire law addressing that subject. That's my point. I don't expect anybody to do anything about it, but it is redundant. If this isn't said in the merit bill, then we have a larger problem. So.
I would agree, except for we don't have a merit bill. We have a Pay Performance Act. We don't seem to ever be able to get a merit bill passed and signed into law. We can get it passed, we just can't get it made law and stick. So, I mean, I do agree that if we had the merit bill in shape, that this wouldn't need to be in here. So maybe the merit bill will pass and we can amend it out.
Any more discussion on that? Please continue on, Congressman.
G is 108, or 1A108, budget limitations and authorization. Again, this language, A, B, and C, is directly as guided by the Supreme Court. The unconstitutional language has been removed from the provisions that were stricken down by the court. What is remaining is what is remaining of budget parameters and limitations that was upheld by the court, in my opinion. And again, we do have a legal opinion from legislative counsel stating as such.
Congresswoman Edwards.
So the reason you're restating it is because you struck the other language in the section that was declared unconstitutional.
So one of the issues of Standing Bear versus Pratt was whether or not Congress had the ability to regulate line item shifting. Holding one on, looks like page 26, is yes as to the line item shifting provisions. We find it is a permissible exercise of Congress's power. So the unconstitutional language has been stricken and the remaining provisions are there in A through C.
So I have a question for the Assistant Principal Chief. I have a question for the Assistant Principal Chief.
Continue.
So I know we've been asked and we've talked about getting some of this language that the court has struck down out of the law. Is it the Office of the Chief's preference to put these individual sections in individual laws so that some of the things that we're trying to do can get done without, you know, if there's something about this bill and a definition, and this has happened before, there's one definition that doesn't pass muster, then we end up striking the whole bill. If you agree that we need to get some of the unconstitutional language or what's been declared unconstitutional out of the bill, how do you suggest we go about doing that, because here's a good example. Do you think we should be separating these out into separate bills?
I always thought that's what the severability clause was for.
Well, not if you can't get the bill into law at all.
Then I would agree with you.
Okay.
Again, we reserve our right to object to this. We're trying to get our heads around it. It's a pretty serious change in the way we go about things.
Continue. The reason I
ask, I mean, it has been a subject of question with the treasurer, and I don't think it should be a change. Severability would mean that if the court struck down a provision or part of a provision, the remaining part would remain. But we've seen from expenditure reports that line item shifting is occurring, even though the court said Congress has the power to do that. So we have seen line item shifting into and out of salaries and wages and benefits. We've seen line item shifting from administrative to non-administrative expenses.
I agree with you, but so that's breaking the law, and restating it is not going to all of a sudden mean that somebody's not going to do that if that's what they're going to do. I'm just wondering.
I would agree.
I'm just wondering if we had a severability clause and we've said that some of these things are, and I didn't mean to, I wasn't speaking about anybody in particular, but if we have a severability clause, the court said certain sections are unconstitutional, the rest of it remains. The idea was to try to get it clearer in law, but it's all going to be vetoed anyway. Then I'm just wondering if it makes sense to even try to do this, or if it makes sense to put it in a different bill. That's why I was asking.
I would say that it makes sense to do it. You're amending that whole section of law.
All right.
Please continue.
Quickly, D, we've discussed this provision before. The treasurer shall have the authority to manage a funded entity's budget. Sorry. However, no line item shifting may be allowed into line items not within an appropriation bill at the time of its enactment if the line item established is to increase by more than $25,000 or the shifting of monies is not consistent with the support documentation for a given year. On page 20 of Standing River Pratt, the court said that we hold that it cannot when the Congress manages a funded entity's budget. I don't believe this is an attempt to manage an entity's budget. It's simply set a threshold at which point they would need to come back for a budget amendment versus a budget modification, which is defined in E.
Assistant Chief.
We reserve the right to.
We're going to adjourn here. We're going to listen to him, and then we're going to adjourn.
To look at the rest of D, but we object to the last phrase, because to our way of thinking, this is making the support documentation part of law. We have always objected to that. We will continue to object to that.
Which portion are you referring to? Assistant?
The last phrase of D. That makes the support documentation binding. And that's an or that doesn't have anything to do with $25,000. As far as I can tell. Might correct me if I'm wrong.
Congressman Potts.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would disagree that the court specifically said it was in the scope of Congress's appropriation power, because each requesting entity is responsible for providing Congress with a, quote, complete, relevant, and accurate picture of its appropriation request. I believe that's done through support documentation. But let's go here. Page 7, line 281, strike, or the shifting of monies is not consistent with the support documentation for a given fiscal year. It's a motion.
What was the motion? Please repeat.
Motion is to strike the last sentence there. So
the last phrase?
Yes, the last phrase.
Okay. Motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor of the motion, please say yes.
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 Any opposed? Seeing none.
Yes. The last section here is budget amendment and budget modifications may be made in accordance with Osage law. This language is specifically a request from Congresswoman Stabler. Reasons for budget amendments and budget modifications include, but are not limited to, lack of authorization, limitation, prohibited line item shifting, or an increase or decrease in funding. But if the committee will allow, we have one more section. Do we want to press on? It's a congressional oversight section, so it's governing what this body will do as an oversight function.
How do you want to proceed? Do you think that we're going to exercise movement on this today? Congressman Stabler?
Make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Motion and second to adjourn. All in favor, signify by saying yes.
Yes.
We are in adjournment.
That's what he wants me to come see.
I think
they want
Shanna, are we off?
Come see him do the long jump.
Shanna. We off the air?
They don't never tell them, so if he's not doing it tomorrow, then he's going to be bummed out. But if he gets done with a couple of events and it's like 10 till 10, then I'll come up here.